on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Good morning, folks. Hello, Melbourne. Hope you're awesome. What a not spectacular day, is it, Mark? It's a little bit cloudy, a little bit, but it's always sunny in here in the SEN studios.
It is. It's cold for me because, I've moved to Sydney and
yes.
It's hot. It's been so hot in Sydney this summer. Mm. Ridiculously so.
What have you been doing up there? Do you hit the waves? I don't see you particularly as a water baby.
No, I body surf every now and again. I go across because I live across the road.
Mm. So, of course you do.
But last Saturday, I went for my first ride after my little knee operation, and it was really hot and really humid and not much wind, which is the worst thing for cycling because you don't get convective heat exchange, so you don't get evaporative cooling.
Mm.
And I thought my head was going to blow off.
Yeah, probably not going to blow off, but you feel like it.
Yeah, you do.
How long between your operation and your first little foray out onto the bitumen on your two-wheeler there, your dragster?
So had the little thing on Monday, the day of the Super Bowl, which was great because I went home and watched it, and I'm a Pats fan, so
You would have been a bit nervy at halftime.
I nearly did a Mark Wahlberg and walked out.
He did walk out, didn't he?
And he blamed a sick kid, but I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, it was amazing. We'll get on to that. So that was the Monday, and I went for my first ride on the Saturday.
Mm. Talk about performing under pressure.
That was crazy.
That had never been. What was it? 23 zip at halftime?
20. Yep.
Yeah, I think
it
was
23-3. Something.
What did they
like
end
that.
Up winning by?
They won in overtime. So it was, I think, 31 all, I think. And then, I don't know, they scored a touchdown in extra time. But the thing is, one thing about you say about performing under pressure, what I think in that sort of situation, what came through to me, because I watched it again later in the week when there was nothing on television and I didn't want to work, the absolute faith in a game plan and faith in your teammates that you are going to run a play and it's going to work.
Mm.
And I think that in sport, trust is really important. And I think that the Pats really had trust in each other. And then on the other side of the coin, you could almost see the Falcons starting to panic.
I reckon they would have, as contradictory as it sounds, I reckon going into the halftime with that break, that the primary thought would have been done stuff it up. So you're focusing on the negative. Well, Jackie's not here to walk us through that. But and then the Pats really had not a lot to lose because from there they wouldn't be expected to win.
Yeah, true.
Now, if you've joined us for the first time, we're a show where we explore all the kind of stuff around sport and performance and recovery and nutrition and kind of progressive overload and mindset and all the variables that help us do better, recover better, train better, get stronger, be faster, be better at our sport, whatever it is. And very frequently, we're joined by an expert. This weekend is such a day, and his name is Andrew Locke. Hi, mate. How are you?
Super, Craig. Fantastic to be with you.
Thanks for coming in to join us. Now, for those who don't know Andrew, he's one of the most highly regarded physios, as voted by me and a bunch of others, in Australia. He's based here in Melbourne. He travels all around, sharing the gospel of recovery and getting strong and deadlifting and lots of other things. He'll unpack that with us. And has been known to, not unlike myself, put a few noses out of joint. Who would have thought? You don't put too many out of joint, do you?
Not anymore.
No.
it's sort of as
too many battle scars.
Well, no. Just as a scientist, there's progression where when you're trying to establish yourself as someone on the world stage, so to speak, then in your formative years, I think you can be a little like that. But
yeah.
I'm old now. I'm just trying to be nice to everybody.
I haven't got that skill yet.
Tell us about you, mate. What do you do? You're a physio, but you're more than that. So give us a little bit of a snapshot about what you do and your, I guess your philosophy on, you know, injury prevention and management and health and recovery and healing and performance, that's not a big question at all. Just a minute.
Well, it goes back to probably well before I was into physio itself. Back in high school, I played for Australia as a baseball player. I was selected to the high school Australian cricket team. And then I saw a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger on a magazine, and that was the end of that career, and I started lifting weights.
You and Tony Doherty.
About the same time.
Same inspiration, I think.
I think Tony and myself have known each other for nearly 30 years now, wow. Even though I'm only 21. Mm. So I really got stuck into the weight training and then decided physio is where I wanted to be as a fallback if I wasn't going to be a professional athlete. And then, yeah, did my undergraduate degree at La Trobe, and then later, years later, did a master's at Melbourne. And my love in life is spinal work.
This is a loaded question, but and we'll make it a little bit of a theme through the morning, I guess. By the way, if you've got a question, Andrew is, like I said, he's at the top of his game, as is Mark. I'm nothing in particular, but you can call me too if you want, 9429 1116. If you've got a question for either of these men, or 0433 98 1116, if you want to call us off the SMS. I think you and I, Andrew, share a couple of common frustrations, and that is some of the things that we see going under the banner of functional training, some of the prescriptions that we see being played out in gyms around Australia. And without being rude, some of the in inverted commas experts prescribing exercise, and I say that thoughtfully and carefully, and because there are amazing personal trainers, there are amazing gardeners, there are amazing doctors, but in any profession, I guess we have people who are at either end of the scale in terms of quality and skill and knowledge and efficiency at what they do.
Oh, definitely. I think we've lost the word functional the same way as we lost the word balance and stability. They become blurred. Mm. So when I get an athlete or somebody comes to see me, the first thing I want to know is what tasks they need to perform. There's no point in getting someone to stand on a BOSU ball and do silly press-ups if they're an athlete who runs on 2 feet on solid ground.
Yeah.
We work with the same performance requirements that an athlete does. So I can't see a point in lying on your back and making that like a dead bug if you've got to run really fast, you've got to jump really fast. So I make sure that my athletes always work within those parameters.
So you would look at whatever task it is, whether or not it's a ballerina, whether or not it's a powerlifter, whether or not it's an Olympic swimmer or boxer, and say, all right, well, what are the physiological requirements of their sport?
What do they need to do?
Yeah, what do you do and how do you need to execute it to be really good at what you do, and what don't you need to do?
Yeah.
Is that part of it?
Very much. Time is valuable to getting a good athlete back. And it's always a cost-to-benefit ratio. If you've got a professional athlete back, that's a requirement to get them back to being paid. So you really have to look at those ones. Whereas if I get an amateur athlete back and they want to get on the footy field next week and they aren't ready for rehab, I got to say, well, what's it going to cost you if you get injured? So, yeah, every case is taken on an individual basis.
I was talking to both of you before the show, and one of the things I do, as you both do, is travel a lot, and so I'm always in gyms in other states, and I've seen this a few times, but last week again I saw a guy about our age, 30, standing on a BOSU ball on 1 foot doing unilateral shoulder press, so opposite foot and hand, and wobbling ridiculously all over the place and executing this terrible exercise, kind of being watched by a reasonably disinterested personal trainer who was the impersonal trainer. And I just thought, here's this guy, and I mean this with love, he's probably got 30-40 kilos to lose. I don't know that this is the thing that's going to get him there.
It looks like the word functional means I've just made this up and it looks really weird. We're going to call it functional because this is going to make it sound like I know what I'm doing. It's a very straightforward thing. The function is different between different people in their walks of life, their employment, and their sporting pursuits.
Do you reckon, Marky Boy, that one of the challenges is that people, and there's no other way to do this, but we go into a course, and so, for example, in Victoria, it's Cert 3 and Cert 4 in fitness, which is cool because it's way better than back in the day when I did it 4,000 years ago. Depending on the course and depending on the content of that course and depending on the lecturers, you literally come out, or a lot of people come out and think, oh, right, I know the stuff I need to know and this is how it works.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And I think in any profession, the analogy I use is driving. So when someone gets their license, they can drive.
Yeah.
But if you think about how, or at least how I drove when I was 18 to how I drive now, it's completely different because you have the experiences. It's the same. Look, in medicine, there are some great doctors and there are some not so great doctors. And it comes down to, so in medicine, you need to get what are called CME points in order to continue to be able to practice. Mm. Now, you can get your CME points by going and finding the courses or the conferences whereby you're going to get real benefit, or you can look and say, oh, there's a conference in the Bahamas. Mm. I'm going to go and register for that. I'm going to play golf for 4 days and then I'm going to get my CME points. Mm. So it all comes down to your willingness to train in your profession, just like sport, if you're a professional athlete, how much you're going to put in. And when it comes down to personal training, I think now I don't know because I'm not in that space. You guys are. But to me, it looks like there's a real market for a personal trainer. People, when I was training early, when I was in my 20s and 30s, they didn't go to a personal trainer. They went to a gym and they just trained. And now everyone wants a personal trainer. So you can become a personal trainer easily, right?
Well, yes. And that's the problem. There's two little barriers to entry, and that Andrew and I were talking about that off air before. So you know, a few rungs up the ladder is an exercise physiologist or exercise scientist, but one of the problems with people who are coming out of 6, 8, 10, 12, even 6 month programs is that there's a lot of stuff they. I mean, you're talking with a person's body. You're talking about a person's body. You know, and so there's just, even now, you know, I'm 30, what am I, 53, I've been doing it for 35 years and I still read stuff and learn stuff pretty much every day that I didn't know and that I don't know. And I've been to uni and lectured at uni, I've done other courses and all that stuff and been on the front line forever. And I think, you know, like I was in Perth for the last 3 days, there was a girl, it just happened to be a girl who was training someone and she was telling her client what a certain movement was doing, and it was totally not doing what she said. And I felt like going, it's not doing that. It's not doing that at all. This is for you. No, it's not. And I just realized, I listened to her a bit, and she was a nice girl, but she did not have one clue about functional anatomy, where things originated, inserted, and actions, and, you know, muscles over joints and what's going on. So, and I said, I felt like going, if you knew just basic, or you know what you should know, as in where things are anatomically, you wouldn't need to guess as to what's working because you've got a good working knowledge of functional anatomy.
Well, you're right there about that, Craig, because this is the biggest thing. I think personal trainers, physios, chiros, osteos, doctors, whatever it takes, they should invest in their careers by further education.
Mm.
Every year you should be attending courses that will further you and improve you as a professional.
Mm.
And that's one of the biggest problems that people tend to do. They're surviving on an income that's, you know, they're building their studios, they're building their practices, things are ticking over, but they're not improving professionally. And that was the best piece of advice I ever had when I graduated. The first day I went and worked with Sports Medicine Victoria, the boss there took me aside and she said, "Your job is to become the best in the world at something." And she looked at me and said, "And I'm the best in the world at shoulders, so you can't have that."
Oh, that's funny, isn't it? At least she knows. But no, I guess there is that thing, Mark, where you're still studying, you're still learning, you're still literally at the front line researching and learning stuff experientially.
The medicine and the way we think about research in medicine is changed so much in the last couple of years, and it's going to change like a tsunami in the next few years. And we're now using big data.
Mm.
We're using the ability to collect data from smartphones. That's then going to lead to personalized medicine.
Mm.
So right now, the way we treat a person with type 2 diabetes is very prescriptive and very what I call sausage mentality. We treat everyone the same.
Yeah.
Now, what we need to do is get to the root of the problem and then treat everyone differently, because we can now whole genome sequence. We can do a lot of interactomic platform analysis where I can then say, you have a mutation of this gene which may mean that you're going to get beta cell exhaustion, just for an example.
I'm going to Google all this in the break, but keep
anyway,
going.
So just to get it, we were talking in the green room, Andrew, you were saying that you need to treat not the symptom, but the root of the problem.
Absolutely.
And that's what we need to get to in every condition. And if I may, just off the SMS, there was, hi guys, best way to lose my gut, Paul LaWolf. Well, the best way to lose your gut is to work out why you got your gut in the first place. And that is probably too little activity and too much intake. There's no magic wand. So Andrew, tell me, if someone came to you and said, I have this pain in my leg that's radiating down my leg, what do you do with that person?
The biggest thing for me is I'm always taking a full history, so I'm wanting to know, very much we're movement analysis based, the way I approach things, which is not what we're taught here in Australia very well at all. So I look at how the person sits for the first thing up, and I want to hear, do they sit well? Do they have a sitting tolerance problem? Do they have a walking tolerance problem? Where are their tolerance points? And then I'll get them to do movements that are similar to those that they complain of. So I'm looking at movement analysis most of the time. And you were mentioning the Super Bowl the other day. You know, for me, that was one of the best examples of hip-driven athletes. You look at the butts on those guys. They have humongous butts. They're Tyrannosaurus Rex butts. So I get guys who come in to see me who have gym injury problems. They got thighs like Tyrannosauruses, but butts like supermodels. Disproportionate.
That's hilarious.
And guess who has back pain?
Yeah.
And this is what we look at. We look at how a person's basic forces they're facing over the day are influencing them. And the problem is, if you're chasing pain, then all people are doing is sticking their dryer needles in, they're massaging, you've got 5 minutes left of your treatment, you walk out feeling better, but you haven't solved or haven't addressed the whole reason you're doing it again. And there's that great philosopher, Ronnie Coleman, and he always said, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to get what you've always got. Mm. And if I get people coming back and they've had lots of episodes of back pain, then what are you always doing that's always getting the same outcome? So that's why I make big changes in the way they move.
I think a lot of therapists and clinicians, not all, but you go there and they treat the symptom and you walk out feeling better till dinner time.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, the pain's back. It's because nothing's been fixed. And I think you highlighted something which I'll throw to both of you is that, you know, we have, for example, you said overdeveloped quads and underdeveloped glutes, and you think in a typical, and I know this is not some gyms, but in a typical suburban gym, how much people train their upper back and how much they train their lower back. And it's almost a lot and hardly any is the answer. You know, so you get these, or how much they train their abs and how much they ignore their glutes and hammies and lower back. So not only do we get this disproportionate kind of focus on what we're training, we then create exacerbated muscular imbalances because one area is staying a 3 out of 10 and the other one's gone from now a 5 out of 10 to a 7 out of 10, just to pluck a number.
Yeah.
So now you're not doing the right thing, but you're now more likely to be injured than before you were because you've created more exaggerated imbalances by the nature of your program.
And then you go read in one of those great magazines, peer-reviewed journals such as Men's Health, how to perform a deadlift to fix up your lower back.
Mm.
And of course, the technique's totally wrong. And so you go and you do something that's totally wrong, but you're thinking it's addressing the right reason, and you just make yourself worse.
What can you do for blokes that, not unlike this bloke over here that's 70 kilos ringing wet that has an aversion to weights?
Yeah. I don't have an aversion to weights. I actually don't. So for me, it's whatever it takes, and I'll expand on this. So right now I have a little bit of a problem with engaging my hamstring when I run. It's been about a year. I went and saw a physio who I think is good because she's not treating the symptom. In fact, she doesn't do any treatment. All she is doing is she's assessing my flexibility, she's assessing my strength, and then she's giving me exercises that I have to do to right that, okay? Now, it took me 20 years to get this injury. Mm. It's not going to take 5 minutes to fix. So I think the other side of things is we live in a world of instant gratification. Mm. Everyone wants the solution in 5 minutes. Mm. things don't take 5 minutes, right?
No, certainly don't take 5 minutes. But once you get someone online who understands exactly where you're coming from and you gain their trust as a team, you know, you form a fantastic relationship. And relationship building is one of the most important things you do when you're actually working with somebody, because, you know, that's another one that the mantras I was given is, every patient you see is the most important person you'll talk to that day, and you've got to make them feel that way. Mm. So you really do give everyone your massive concentration, and you get the best out of them.
It's the same too, Mark, with weight loss. People, you know, they've gained weight over 20 years and want it gone by Tuesday. You know,
yeah, it doesn't happen.
Everyone that I talk to, not everyone, a lot of people that I talk to want to create significant shift in their world, want it to be quick, easy, convenient and painless. Can you do that? The answer is no. And not only, here's the other part or the other aspect to that, and Nicholas in Cranbourne, we're coming to you in a sec. The other part to that is not only it, isn't it easy quite often? Sometimes it's painful and uncomfortable and inconvenient and all that. But that tough stuff is actually where you grow, learn and evolve. If you know, you can't master what you avoid. And if you're constant, if your default setting is quick, comfortable, easy, painless, good luck succeeding at anything, not just rehab and not just, you know, your career, but good luck succeeding at anything if you're hardwired for comfort and pleasure.
You're so true.
Yeah.
Let's go to Nicholas in Cranbourne. Morning, Nicholas. Thanks for waiting.
Good day, guys. How are you going?
Good, man.
I've just been having the problem for over the last year, where every month or every couple of weeks at the moment, I seem to be getting diarrhea and a really bad fever and vomiting. And I've been to the doctors. They've done blood tests. They can't find any problem with me.
Well, I will preface this answer with, there's not a medical doctor in the studio. So this is all educated guessing and not a prescription, just a conversation. But I'm going to point at the bloke with glasses over there.
Okay, so Nicholas, is there any pattern to what you're doing before that leads to the vomiting episode or the diarrhea? Is there any pattern?
No, I can't figure it out. Like, I've stopped smoking, I've stopped drinking, I've started exercising again, I've tried changing my diet.
So how have you tried changing your diet?
Well, I've tried just to cut out all fatty foods, and I've just tried to be trying to just eat everything good pretty much, like grilled chicken and fish and all that.
So a GI problem like that, have you seen someone to try and see if you have any, you know, there's...
I've been going to the doctors for the last month, and they've done stool tests, urine tests. The only thing that I'm waiting for is on Tuesday they're going to do some scopes to go down my throat.
Well, I think that's,
if they can find anything.
I think that's, you'll wait for those. So getting an endoscopy is something that you should probably do.
Thanks for your call, Nicholas. Good luck with that. We better go to break because we're super late, but super interesting conversation. Andrew, Mark and myself will be back on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport, SEN All Sport All Day, the science of sport. Mark Fabreo and I are here. Jackie Lada, of course, is normally here every Sunday between 10 and 11, but this week the role of Jackie Lauder is being played by Andrew Locke. He's down there. Say hello to the folks, Andrew.
Wonderful to hear everybody today.
Now, a couple off the SMS. I'll go the first one because it's probably more me. Morning, guys. Great topic. Given the large number of PTs advertising their services, how can we tell who is good and who should be avoided? Stephen from Carrara. That's a great question. So... My recommendation when people ask me that face-to-face is somebody who's got a minimum of... Now, sorry to all you newly qualified, but you'll get there. Someone who's got a minimum 5 years' experience, somebody who's... and/or somebody who's got an awesome reputation, and you hear that from a bunch of people, like I heard about Andrew Locke. 20,000 people told me about him in the last 6 months. I thought I should look him up. So if people are talking about a trainer, people are getting results, people are saying good things, and it's things like he or she cares, I'm getting great results, my pain is being alleviated, things are working, he or she is a great communicator, and so on. And also, if sometimes you can just ask for a reference. But really, you know, whether or not someone's Cert 4 qualified or they've got a master's in X Phys or anything in between, A lot of it is, as long as they understand the basics and more, it really comes down to, do they care a lot? Are they a good communicator? Will they give me 100% of their effort, energy, and time? And then it's kind of really up to you as to whether or not you connect with the person. Guys, to stay practicing Cairo, you need to keep up to date annually with CPD points. Oh, well, that's off the conversation we had there.
Just start at the top one. Hi, I was just wondering, I go to the gym regularly, but hard to get motivated for cardio and also trying to lose the belly. Sean Carnegie. Well, if you are not motivated to do a particular genre of exercise, and we've had this conversation many, many, many times,
is this the thing we argue on the most?
No, well, not really. But my idea is try and pick something that is enjoyable. So if you're really want to working on cardio and you're not really interested in jumping on a bike or a treadmill, one of the things you could do, if, for example, you like basketball, play a one-on-one with your mate, half court, that's cardio. That's really working your cardiovascular system. Or try something else that you like.
And my advice
is, chase your girlfriend around.
I don't care
room
if you don't like it. Does it work? Don't be a baby. Suck it up. Do the thing that works.
So you'll both get different clients, won't you?
See, we have a mediator here.
No, I'm only kidding. Look, I reckon the best combination is if you can find something that, for the most part, you enjoy and it produces a result that you want, that's a pretty good mix. 94291116 is the number. Andrew Locke is in here. Talking all things injury prevention, back strength, deadlifts. If you're a budding deadlifter, this guy is the guy to ask a question to. He's probably the man in Australia with the most insight and anatomically correct kind of understanding of how the movement should go. Let's go to Kevin in Cranbourne. G'day, Kick. Oh, not ready, apparently. And off the SMS, hi guys, I've been diagnosed with bursitis in my right shoulder. This for you, Andrew, I'm thinking. Probably caused by cricket and push-ups. I've been resting as much as I can. Is there anything else I can do to help the rehab process other than just rest? Now, just remember, when Andrew talks to this, he's talking as somebody who hasn't met you, seen you, or had a conversation with you. So not a prescription, just advice.
Absolutely, is the opinion. It's probably the way that I approach questioning a person who comes in and says, I've got shoulder bursitis. What I would look at is, once again, a very deep history, but the bursitis may be a radiological diagnosis, but does it fit in with the assessment that I would do?
What is bursitis?
A small little sac that sits in between muscles, tendons, bones to make sure they basically don't run into each other and allow movement to be better. So it inflames. When you got the itis, it means that the bursa has increased its sac of fluid. Now, with a person who comes through with shoulder bursitis, one of the questions is why? What are you doing that's created it? And I'd also be looking at what exercises should you do to see if you can clear that movement. So, now the usual thing is with a shoulder bursitis, it's the abduction of the arm out to the side will be a subacromial bursitis. Well, are the lats doing their jobs? Are the teres muscles doing their jobs? Are the rotator cuff doing their job correctly? You might find that the bursitis is, in fact, a false positive. You know, it's not the thing that actually needed to be treated. It was a dysfunction in your movement pattern. Your neck might be stiff. That might be contributing to it. Your thoracic spine could be stiff. So you've got to look at every area. Usually the last thing I'm going to look at is the bursitis or the spot where you say it's painful. I want to find out everything else that you don't know is probably contributing to it.
Go, Marky boy.
Just off the SMS, one right up Andrew's wheelhouse. Which is the better piece of equipment for deadlifts, Olympic bar or trap hex bar?
Oh, if you want it, well, depends. Depends what your task is.
If you don't mention the task.
So jeez, he makes things long, doesn't he?
If you want to be a power lifter, then you're going to have to lift the bar, the deadlift, the Olympic bar. But if you want the movement to be just a general strong lift, then it is safer with the trap bar because the bar's the closer to your centre of gravity. So you're putting the bar next to you, basically, where your centre of gravity line is.
And the trap bar, Andrew, is the one that you kind of step into, isn't it?
You do.
So that's right. So instead of pulling the weight from the front, kind of, it is, yeah, more in your...
It's a different movement.
Yeah, and it's not the same movement, is it? Yeah.
Not at all, no. A pure deadlift means you've got to get your knees back, your hips up, out the way of the bar, which is very much different to what you're going to do with a trap bar.
Yeah.
They both have their places.
Let's go to Kevin in Cranbourne, who has joined us now. G'day, Kev.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
I'm just thinking about, I'm 51, I'm probably 20 k's overweight. I've just recently given up smoking and I'm starting to use the Fitbit to make sure I do 10,000 steps each day.
Good work.
I'm thinking about doing that man challenge that everyone's advertising. I'm just wondering whether that would be a sensible thing to do, go straight into something as impacting as that is.
Now, I'm going to be 100% honest. I don't know a lot about it. I think it's losing the beer gut without losing all the beers. I think that's one of their mantras. Look, as long, Kevin, as irrespective of the program, which program you choose, as long as it's in the ballpark for what you need and for what your body needs, and as Andrew was talking before about progressing exercise, no, I think that was off air, maybe, wasn't
yeah.
it? Anyway... just make sure that you start at a level which is a little bit below what you think you can do. But anything which is consistent, anything which is not overly intense, anything which has got a good mix of strength and flexibility and aerobic stuff and it's executed well is probably going to be a good starting point for you. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Christy in Reservoir. Hi, Christy. Thanks for joining us. Hello, Christy.
I've just got a kneecap that doesn't sit in the tracking properly, and I've also got like a little tear in my meniscus and arthritis. I am in my late 30s. I do train maybe 4 to 5 times a week, 3 at Curves Gym and 1 with my PT trainer. But the issue I've got with my knee is the ITB where the down near where it joins at the kneecap is always a little bit tight. But when I stand in standing up on my feet at work in the one spot, I seem to have to sit down to actually get to my knee to actually bend again.
Well, Christy, one of the things I'd definitely be looking at here is not blaming the tight things too often. Often the biggest problem I find is the tight things are often the only things that are actually holding you together. You loosen the tight thing, then you've got nothing holding you together. So we might not have to blame the ITB too bad. We might have to ask ourselves more likely, why is the ITB tight? Now, you mentioned that the patella seems to be not sitting in its normal position. That's actually quite rare. It's overly diagnosed that way because usually it tends to be that the femur bone itself is actually rotating medially. And that tends to lead us up towards saying there's likely to be weak gluteals in there. So with this, Christy, I would tend to say the focus for the knee, I would tend to move up the body and ask questions and have it properly assessed as to how your pelvic function is, where your glutes are firing up, whether your lower back has appropriate movement, whether you're using your hips well. All those things need to be cleared before we would say, let's go and say the knee is the only problem there. But one of the big things is there, I wouldn't be going in and getting released, as people tend to say about the ITB, because don't worry, you can't release fascia anyway.
Oh, myofascial release is a crock, is it?
Well...
Thanks for your call, Christy. Listening
Good
to
luck,
Science
Christy.
Of Sport, Andrew Locke, Mark Fabreo in the house. If you want to send us a message, 0433981116. It's very random today, but it's kind of good. Talking about backs and deadlifting and injuries and stuff, life, stuff, all that. Give us a buzz. Or if you want to call us, have a chat on the other side of the break, 9429 1116 at 16 minutes to 11 o'clock.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Andrew Locke, not Block, in answer to that question off the SMS. Thank you from Matt. Mark Fabreo is in here. I'm going to give me a quick plug, because can. If you go to craigharper.net, one word, craigharper.net, so I'm doing a gig here in Melbourne at Deakin Uni on March 18, which is an open to the public. Kind of, you know, get your life, get your head, get your body, get your thinking, get your potential where it needs to be so you can maximise your choices, behaviours and outcomes. That's going to be March 18 between 2 and 5 at Deakin Uni. If you want to come along and hopefully get a little bit of inspiration, education and motivation, which might set you on a path better than the one you're on now, go to that website, craigharper.net, go into events, and then you'll find the Melbourne gig and you'll type in the code SEN and you'll get a $47 ticket, not a $77 ticket, because I'm ace. Let's go to Alex in Mill Park. Hi, Alex.
Hello, how are you going?
Good, thanks.
I've got a bit of a pain in my hip, which the pain then shoots down my quad, down my calf, and sometimes goes into the heel a little bit. So is there any, really, I wanted to see if I can get some tips as to where this pain came from and maybe how to resolve it.
Yeah, that's hard, but we'll give Andrew a go. In a minute, I want to ask a couple of questions. Does it feel nervy, like neural?
The shooting pain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you feel it at all in the front of you? Which leg is it, right or left? Doesn't matter, but do you feel it in the front of your leg, on your shin, in your tib anterior muscle at all?
In the shin a little bit. At the shin, it's more of just like a tickle in the shin. So the pain doesn't go too far down that like the shin area, just like a tickle.
I've got a guess, but I've got no idea. So I'm gonna hand over to the bloke who might have an idea.
I would almost say, Alex, that I've rarely ever seen a pain that's in the hip that doesn't have a back component to it somewhere, or a back problem that doesn't have a little bit of hip dysfunction to it. So often pain in the hip may end up being actually a different problem to the one that's shooting down the calf and into the foot. So it's worth looking at them as possibly being two different things, even though they may sometimes come in concurrently. So I would tend to go find an excellent sports physician who would probably be able to do an outstanding assessment of both hip and back. And that would be the first port of call, is somebody who does great assessment work on that sort of area. So I would tend to look up online and find somebody who's really good at those two areas.
I'll tell you, someone who's good at that is a man we had on very recently. His name's Cal Freed.
Cal Freed, yes, I know the name well.
And he's based in Brighton. And if you're not near Brighton, it's well worth the trip. And I'm plugging him because he's good. Thanks for your call, Alex.
Is.
Let's go to Nick in Boronia. Morning, Nick.
Boys, how's it going?
Good, thanks, man.
That's the way. Look, yeah, I'm just trying to lose some weight at the moment, and I've actually recently lost about 25 kilos, but to be honest, it hasn't really been through a huge amount of exercise. I've just changed my job, and it's a lot more physical and don't eat as badly as I did at the last place. But I've found that I've sort of plateaued, and even though now I have started doing a fair bit of walking and a little bit of jogging, it's not really dropping off the way I wanted it to, and I'm thinking it might be my diet. So I was wondering what foods you think might be best to be trying to eat.
Yeah, okay, Nick. So it's most likely your diet. There's a saying that you can't outrun a bad diet. So even if you're very, very active, but you're eating a bad diet, then that's not going to help. So in terms of the food, the main thing we know now about diet is what we want to avoid is big spikes and drops in insulin, because that can lead to hunger. So you want to cut out the usual things that you probably already know. Refined sugars are terrible for your diet. So anything with refined sugars in it, you want to try and cut out. Anything in it which is anything which has a component of processed fat, and that's only because it's very dense in energy. So you want to try and cut out really high saturated fats in your diet and really refined sugars, and you'll find that that'll lead to being less hungry.
All right.
Thanks for your call, Nick. Just off the SMS before we go to a break, Andrew Locke. Hi, guys. Got some slight disc bulge. It says disc bludge. That's hilarious. In my lower three vertebrae. Well, anyway. Been to a physio and the pain is abating. How long should I wait before returning to surfing, golf and gym? Now, remember, all this stuff today, folks, it's three blokes in a studio with a level of knowledge and experience commenting. So none of this is prescriptive. Before you do anything, listen to what we say and suggest, but then go and get it cleared with someone else.
Totally right. So the approach here is, you know, obviously I'm not assessing you personally at this point, so we're looking at the parameters, I would say, we're looking at. Now, disc bulges exist in at least 80% of all people, and they're not always symptomatic. So you may find that there's quite a few non-symptomatic disc bulges there. There may be one level that is. One of the most important things your physio is going to do is look at how you move, because there may be something you're doing which may be prolonging the situation. There's something that may be that needs to be addressed to get you back as fast as possible. Realistically, though, most back problems, 80% of them will settle in around about 4 weeks, and most settle in, 92% of them will settle in about 8 weeks. So that's the general resolution. But if you're moving back to sport, your physio will be assessing whether you are capable of moving that back into that movement and pattern without pain. So strength of your core, that's going to be the major thing to get you back to those endeavours.
Thank you for your question, Mark. Now, just before we go to the break, I want to say, and thanks for the answer, Andrew, I want to say well done to, I'm going to say colloquially, my girls, the Vixens, been doing some work with the Vixens. I take zero credit for what they did last night. Just been doing a bit of high-performance stuff with them at the VIS, and what a great bunch of girls they are. And sorry I couldn't be there last night, girls. I was on a plane on the way back from Perth, but geez, you smashed it. Congratulations. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, more of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. We're nearly done and dusted, but one more question for Andrew Locke. Is the natural stance of the person deadlifting the correct stance to use? I don't know what they exactly mean by that.
Probably just talking about neutral spine.
Right.
And that's a really great idea. We've got to learn to control the neutral spine before we move into anything else. If you have a look at all the very greatest...
Just, sorry to interrupt. Explain neutral spine to our listeners.
Well, basically the natural curvature that's in the lower back when a person stands. The right. Natural curvature.
Right.
So the natural curves in the body are there basically to distribute your body weight correctly over the years of evolution that we have as Homo sapiens. So if you have a look at the greatest deadlifters of all time, you'll always see them with rounded backs. Now, that's the same thing that is like a Formula One driving car. It's an elite thing to be able to do. You have to know how to be able to do that, but you have to learn as driver first. So anyone who starts deadlifting, it's neutral spine imperative only. That position is where you start. And you've got to spend at least a year there. If you're going to deadlift 3 times a week, I want you in neutral spine only till you can prove you can control it. And then once you can control it, okay, after a year, I'll let you have a look at a PB. Do not ever attempt a maximum weight within 1 year of training. That's a great way to end up at the surgeon's office.
Now, in 30 seconds, I've just realised we've been talking about... we've got a call. All right. No, I've got to do it. 30 seconds. What's a deadlift?
A deadlift is where the bar is placed on the ground in front of the shins, and a person puts their hands around it and stands up. That's basically it.
Boom. Quick one from Phil in Greensboro. Phil, we got 1 minute. Go.
G'day, guys. I'm 60. I've just started cycling again. I've got an injury. Did a hamstring, which was an old injury years ago. Started riding again. I went to a physio and did the exercise. But the after effect seems to be like I've got after effects of a cramp. Still got power and movement and everything else, but just sort of this hanging around thing.
Well, Phil, actually, I think, Mark, you've got a bit of triathlete experience here on the bike and a bit of hamstring. You can throw this one in.
I actually think what is needed is an MRI to see if you have a slight tear in your hamstring tendon. And if you do, then you have to get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem, usually with these nagging hamstring injuries, is that you have a back-related problem. That's meaning that your buttocks and hamstrings aren't engaging when they're meant to. So I would actually go and get an MRI before anything else.
Thanks for your call, Phil. Sorry we couldn't be longer, but we've got to go. Coming up after 11 o'clock, the first serve, 11 till 12, from 12 till 2, Sports Central. Then after that, live coverage of Sydney v North Melbourne in the JLT Community Series. Andrew, quick plug. Where can people, I know you're already busy, but find you, follow you, read your stuff?
On Facebook at Functional Strength Rehabilitation. That's the best place to see me. And I'm conducting a 2-day seminar on back injuries in April the 1st and 2nd at a powerlifting gym in South Melbourne.
Awesome. Look it up or contact me on Facey and I'll tell you where to go, so to speak. Marky boy, have a good... You're going away.
Yeah, going away again this week. So I'll see you in a couple of weeks, mate.
All right. Well, you be good, all right?
You too, mate.
Be a good boy.
I'll miss you.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. See you next week, same time.